All right, g'day everyone. It's the Two Ordinary Cops.
We're back, mate. We're back. A very special day today.
It's a very special day, mate. Anzac Day. So we're recording this one and we're going to release it tomorrow at our usual time. But,
For those people who are listening.
Well, yeah, exactly. mate, do you want to give us a bit of what happened today?
Yeah, so I've travelled up yesterday and we're in Brisbane and we went over to Redcliffe for the march this morning, which was really good. We sort of hung out at the... went and got a... did a bit of brekkie on the Redcliffe foreshore there. And then into the RSL at Redcliffe to catch up with an old mate from... is still in the job, actually, up in the NT. Him and his family came down. They're just seeing what's going on around the place. And he's also an Afghan veteran. He was in the 1st Armoured Regiment back in the day, which is the old tank unit. And the way he's explained it to me, him and actually quite a few of them... I knew a couple of blokes who were in the job who were ex-1st Armoured and 2 Cav because they were based in Darwin.
Yep.
For those playing at home, so 1st Armoured Regiment, there's a 2nd Cavalry Regiment. They're both armoured vehicle units that I think they both used to be in Darwin. I'm not sure where they both are now. But what he did was he was tasked to drive for Special Forces over there, and he drove Bushmasters over there. And anyway, he was with a couple of mates who formerly, and one of them's still in the army, and the other one's just got medically retired. And it was a bloody poignant place.
Yeah.
So we met him early and we having a chat and over a coffee, and then we had a pretty early beer because that's what you do because it's Anzac Day. Yeah, well, we don't need an excuse, mate, really.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, but it was a good excuse today. Yep. And the one thing we got talking, and straight away you could see the recognition of the similar service.
Yep.
So, I mean, I was in the army for a very short period of time, but I didn't do anything. I didn't go overseas or anything like that. And yourself, you never served in the military.
No.
But there was a real understanding of each other. We sort of got each other. And my mate was the intermediary. Like, he's served in both and still serving in the police. And one thing that sort of struck me was, and it sort of talked about sacrifice and stuff like that. Well, one of the blokes there, I thought he looked a bit stiff.
Yeah.
He was a bit...
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
He said, must have a new... must not be used to wearing a suit or something. Anyway, he pulls out his phone and says, I'll show you. And he's had his spine... fused.
In his neck.
Been recently medically retired from the army after, 20-odd years, I think it was. And the trouble is I got chatting to me mate afterwards, he said, it was his life. Like, he was a lifer.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of guy who would definitely stay in the army for a very long time, and they potentially had 20 years out of him.
Yeah, exactly.
And here he is with a pretty bad injury that's gonna cost him. Like, it's gonna make life quite difficult. And he's there with 3 little kids and stuff like that. And it got me thinking. It's like the sacrifice is still there.
Yeah.
Like, these are, I mean, he's been through the wars. This is a guy who, he said he was training people to drive armoured vehicles down in Puckapunyal in Victoria. And he suffered whiplash, which was one of the problems he had. Something else that went wrong with him was he stepped off a tank and fell 2.5 metres to the ground in the middle of the night. And he also got blown up twice in Afghanistan with... hitting roadside IEDs. So the poor bugger's been through the ringer, and it was just interesting to sit there and have a chat and sort of realise the similarities in service. But then I sat back and went, well, last time I checked, I've never been blown up in a police car on the side of the road.
Like, it's a fairly
full-on experience.
Yeah, I mean, having those, like, bombs go off underneath, the car as they're going along, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It really hits home what it was like over there, though, too, a bit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not the same as being there, definitely, but you can get a good understanding of what it must have been like.
Yeah. It was a wild... It's incredible what they went through. Another thing that was interesting about him was he had recorded things on his phone while he was over there.
Yeah.
And I saw humour.
Yeah.
Which I relate to immediately. Like, humour in adversity. Like, he spun his phone around on his face, and you can sort of see the shock in his eyes, and he's covered in dust. And he goes, I just got effing blown up.
Yep.
And then you can hear the humor. He's going, it was the best experience of my life.
Yep.
It's like, my God, man, you're crazy. But you can see he was full of adrenaline, and he's making light of a wild situation. But I just thought, wow, that's unbelievable.
And I mean, you talk to them, and we touched on a bit on the PTSD, talking to them and all that sort of thing, because they, you know, they've got a higher level, of course, because they've been through.
You could see it. You could see the minute we started talking, it was
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but they were good. Like, you know, they chatted about us and about it and all that sort of thing, and probably, you know, they wouldn't chat it to normal people about it.
No.
Because you know, you need somebody that understands.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was. I mean, it wasn't the whole conversation wasn't more, but there was quite a few laughs, and it was good.
Yeah, that's right. A few old stories as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we started spinning a few yarns, which we can and will do.
Yeah,
And they spun a few back too, talking about things that happened over in Afghan and things that happened in the unit.
Yep.
And we, you know, talked about a couple of other fellas who we mutually know that sort of served with them and then served in the NT police.
Yep.
And you know, they've got the sort of similar stories to that. It's funny, one story, and it was familiar to me, but my mate, who I'd spoken to quite a bit, his mate said, oh, he's probably told you about the helicopter crashed on him. And I'm like, oh, what? And he's like, yeah, helicopter crashed, like right next to his vehicle, and then fell over on its side, and all the rotors got torn off the top of the helicopter, and then it tipped back on its base.
Yep.
It was basically making the horrible scream that a helicopter makes when it dies. And it had flung its blades everywhere in a million directions, and he said how no one was killed was a miracle. He said it should have hit heaps of people, but didn't hit anyone.
Yep.
But he said the level of force that came out was they had a Bushmaster vehicle at the back, and where the winch goes through at the back had actually cleaved right in, like on a massive amount.
It's really heavy steel. Those things withstand blast. Like
massively thick steel. Yep. So the impact was just out of control. Yep. And yeah, my mate said it would turn into a multiplayer game had it hit me. So that's the that's the little humour that he was on about there. But that's something that I'd never heard a lot about before. So
no, that's right.
It's a pretty full-on story.
It's one of those ones where you come close to death, or and some people hits harder than others, where they sit there and go, geez, I could have died or something like that. But some people just move on. It's neither here nor there whether it's good or bad, which way you go. But I mean, that can affect you later on too.
Yeah.
And that's something we're trying to get a better understanding of. How things can actually pop up, and you know, you talked about how the ankle can flare and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Certain things will settle off.
Well, it's funny that it's come back again, that old saying that twisted ankle snaps spine. So they were saying, my mate was saying, he hasn't got twisted ankle, he's got sore back version. Yeah. So it's a little bit worse than us, and that's probably fair enough, considering he's also had quite an experience. He's been in the NT police for quite a while too, so and he's very operational the whole time. So it was just interesting to have a chat to them, and that was good. But I mean, the whole day itself was good. So we went down and watched the march.
Yep.
And you summed it up well. As we turned to walk back, you're going, gee, I love a pipe band.
Yep.
As you're wiping your tears away, and it's like, mate, I do too. And it's sort of,
I just get so emotional, when they're playing the bagpipes as they're coming around the corner. Like I listen to it, and it just, I don't know, it puts me in this thing. The fact is, and look, I'll tell you this, and people might judge me on this, but everybody remembers the massacre over in Christchurch. Mm. You know, the guy shot all those people and all that. And somehow, I was on my phone at the time, and actually the feed came through to my phone, right? And I actually saw it, like, while it was happening. Oh. And this guy's like, bang, bang, shooting. And I'm sitting there completely as an investigator would.
Yeah,
and I looked at it, and I've gone, okay, that one's down. Yep, no, that one's down. Like, and I'm running scenarios through my head about how we would approach this and all this sort of thing. No emotion whatsoever.
Nah.
But those bagpipes,
I was
crying.
Hits you right in the feels, mate.
And it's funny because you kind of, when you're in those situations, you switch off that emotion because you've just done it so many times.
Yeah.
But then when you're in a more relaxed kind of atmosphere, like I said, I can watch that. Mm. You put Bambi on, I'll like a baby.
Yeah. So I do love a bag. I sort of sink back into it and get, I don't know, it sort of makes me feel comfortable. I like it. Don't get me wrong, it hits you in the feels as well. But one thing that did hit me was that I saw the boys standing there, and they're in their suits wearing the medals. They put their berets on, the black berets. I call the oil rag because they're the black berets of the armoured corps. And I saw them holding their kids' hands. I thought, that's bloody, how good is that?
It is, yeah.
It's like we're the age of, I remember when I was a kid, the old World War II and Vietnam. Yeah. Vietnam blokes were fairly young.
Yep.
The World War II blokes were the old blokes.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at them just thinking they were just immortal, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And ironically, mortality's caught up. There's none left.
No,
there's
very, very few. I think there's six, actually.
World War II.
Yeah, that was... Oh, well, I read that in the news, how accurate that is. I'm not really
sure. Yeah, I'm not... There'd be a few still around, but they're very elderly now.
Yeah, so it's... And you know, the scars... And this is one thing... Like, Anzac Day is very big, like, I know, for especially for frontline services and the Army and Defence Force as a whole. But what... And you know, it annoys me when you hear all the crap going on about it from certain, you know, people around the globe that sort of thing. And I sit there and go, you know, the thing is, you've never experienced, and I haven't, but I have so much respect for people that laid down their life so I can actually be able to do a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, I pay homage to them because they did that. They put their life on the line so we can enjoy sitting here having a beer and doing a recording where we can actually get it out to the world.
Mm.
Do you know? And if you, anybody that doesn't respect that, you're a lowlife in my eyes.
Well, I think it's more that we're very removed from, we live a pretty comfy life these days. And I think what happens is there are people who have served and have seen what goes on in the world and have seen the wolf, which is not my term, but it's the old saying that, you know, you handle the wolf sort of thing. So I think we're pretty aware of that there is badness in the world and there are people who stand between the good people and the bad people. And I kind of like that. And I don't know, to be aware of that to me is I feel strong from that. There was a lot of people walking around who were like, what are these guys up to? Like, who cares? There's that little bit of, I don't know, empathy or apathy towards it, like there's what's going on. But I think it's not too bad. I was pretty happy to see people from all walks of life there today.
Yeah.
And everyone was proud, everyone was clapping, that was good.
A lot of kids, like the kids that there's a lot from schools were in the march.
Yeah, all the schools, sort of thing.
Yeah. I think, you know, the more we can actually remind especially the younger generation, I mean, it was probably, we were a bit closer to it when we were younger. But the more we can actually keep that just going, you understand you actually lived this life because they paid the ultimate sacrifice.
Yep.
And they were only young.
They were babies, mate.
Yeah, babies.
They were half our age. They were kids. Well, look at that. In the World War One and Two, they were teenagers.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and I look at teenagers now and even have conversations with them. It's funny because there's that running joke where you go, I'm 40. Well, I'm not. I'm 41. I'm 42 this year.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm 20.
Yeah.
Until I hang out with a 20-year-old, it's like, no, I'm 40. So, to me, you know, they're young. They were very innocent. They were naive.
Yeah.
They went into something and you go, holy bloody hell. Like, they ran at it. And I know a lot of that would have come from ignorance about what was going on.
Probably.
We look back, but they still did it.
Yeah.
You know, there was no whinging about, oh, poor me, poor this.
No.
Someone else's fault, it's this. No, they just got into it.
They just got in there and did it, yeah. Some of the people's views on it really annoy me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they live with the privilege now because they paid the ultimate sacrifice.
And that's the ignorance.
Yeah.
That's the ignorance of not understanding why you have it so good.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think just the day in general too was... It's a bloody nice spot. I've never been down to that foreshore at Redcliffe.
No.
It's a nice spot down there. And, or up there, it's north of us. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're sitting in Indooroopilly at the moment, so it's a bit north, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought that was good. And to me, and one thing that struck me too, as I walked back, there was a couple of Queensland coppers there just doing their thing, walking around.
Mm.
And a bit younger than us, probably. And they were gonged up. A few of them had medals on.
Yep.
As in military service medals.
Yeah.
And it reminded me as well, it's like, in all states, there's a lot of ex-servicemen from the Afghan and women, ex-service, ex-military who've come across now and are in the police forces around the country.
Yeah.
So even on their day, on Anzac Day, the day that the veterans are allowed to carry on and kick on and we'll tolerate them having a vomit when they get home if they really need to.
Yeah, that's right.
Although it's getting a bit hard to do that now. I pull up terribly. So... They, on their day, they're still serving.
Yeah, that's right.
They are walking around policing the place.
Policing the place, yeah.
So, well, you know, and there was an ambo there, actually.
Yeah, mate. And it was funny because one of the ones recently in the podcast, you mentioned that, when was the last time you got pulled over for a roadside BS?
Yeah.
And funnily enough, we're heading on the way home, and I was driving because I was only drinking zeros. I know, yeah.
Yeah, no judgment there, mate.
Yeah, that was definitely wrong of me. But, hey, I did have to drive all the way back to Indooroopilly. And, yeah, we went through a roadside.
Yeah, they were just setting up the
boys. We didn't actually get pulled over. We went straight through.
No, we could have could have dropped the podcast, mate, given a shout out to see if they get them all signed up. Not to worry. But, yeah, so we had a good morning out there. And actually, it was funny because obviously once we got through, we're talking a bit about the military stuff earlier on. And then we were chatting, just general conversation. It wasn't all deep and meaningful. It was having a laugh and just a catch up.
Yeah.
And we got talking to me mate who has quite a bit to do with the new computer system.
Ironically, that's right. Yes, exactly.
And he was sort of saying how the pros and cons of the new system. But I know we spoke about how we used to get cranky with the inefficiencies of the job. Like, I think we'll talk, it came up this morning. So since we released the podcast where we talked about how the systems used to annoy us and how I heard about the briefcase system in WA, we've had it confirmed,
mate. We have had it confirmed.
We've had a former Northern Territory police officer who now serves in WAPOL.
Yep.
Who got in touch with you and has let know that not only is it the same as what I was summing up, it's actually better.
Yeah, that's right. He said 100 times better.
Yeah.
He said he said it's great. He said you can really smash through the paperwork or smash through the arrest, so to speak.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can get a much higher volume because it's just simple.
Yeah. And if it's worth it, if there's any of the executive members of any state police force are listening, which hello, sir or ma'am.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for joining us. I don't know if you are or not, but
a shout out to them as well if you're listening.
My biggest gripe, as I've said before, was the inefficiency in the job. And if you've got a good computer system that does the work for you, and you can use, we've got AI now, for God's sake.
Like, well, exactly.
The opportunity's there to have a really good system and motivate the guys, because most of the time you've employed good people. If you let them do what you've trained them to do and get the systems working for them, it'd be so much better.
Oh, exactly.
It's just, I remember just smacking your head against a brick wall going, here we go again. It's just time, double
it
up.
It was funny because in the last episode, we spoke about how we started doing video statements.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember one of the discussions you and I had was we needed a system where you could get it transcribed, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, you mentioned today, there is actually now somewhere where you can actually get it transcribed. So that would have made it far more efficient, especially in our day.
Yeah. Well, we probably do sound like dinosaurs to the new guys, but...
Yeah.
We would have to get things transcribed manually by people.
Yeah, that's right.
And my mate today's just gone, mate, it's all automatically transcribed as it happens. He said, you do have to check it because it comes out with some wild stuff.
Yep.
But
what did he say, Casuarina was?
I can't remember. He said Casuarina comes back as
Inurina.
Cars Marina or something. Cars in the Marina or something, like So, I mean, but that's fine. He said it's easy to fix, but it's still a hell of a lot quicker than having someone sit there and listen to it all.
Mm.
So it's... yeah, it sounds like that sort of side of things is kicking along pretty well.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I mean, it's definitely far more efficient than when we were there.
Oh, yeah.
It was mentioned, and I know we had this problem in our day, is a lot of the officers early on, I've spoken about this 100 times, they're not correctly trained to start with because mistakes, it's harder to fix a mistake than get it right the first time.
Yeah.
And like I said, even towards the end of my career, I spent more time fixing up mistakes that junior cops had made, and it wasn't their fault.
No.
They hadn't had the right training. They didn't have the right senior partners coming out, and that's a key point. The problem is then it gets progressively worse as it goes
through. Well, it just forms a habit.
It does.
Yeah. So I think the trouble is too, and for people who aren't necessarily in the police, I think the police get it because it's like, when do you have time to train? So I remember we'd have a day for command training where we'd go and all do some course. It was like, can I cut this away? I've got so much work to do.
Yeah.
If I'm not being given tasks, you turn up for work and the radio just sends you to the next job, next job. If we could just have a day where we just didn't learn anything, we could just catch up with paperwork, that'd be magnificent, thank you. But it never happens. So I think the trouble is, a lot of organisations, they have work to do, but then they have time to train.
Yep.
The police don't.
No.
In no jurisdiction, really, is there time. Unless you get withdrawn from operational service and sent on a course.
That's right.
If you're just rostered, there's a limited number of resources there,
yep,
and you just can't get the training happening.
Well, it could have been a funny one there. When I was working in the domestic violence unit, I remember we were sitting there one day, we had to go, I don't know, we were made, technically.
Voluntold, I think, is the technical
term.
Yeah.
To go to this, it was a bit of a talk, and it was where they were talking. It's more touchy-feely stuff and all that.
I thought you were all about that, mate.
No.
You're the Cuddle Squad 3000, Chelsea.
Hey, but especially in the DV unit, you understand what it's like to investigate. You've got so much to do.
Mm.
And anyway, and we didn't really want to go. This is about hugging people, right?
Mm.
We are nice. We at that stage, I can honestly say the domestic violence unit was one of the probably most compassionate group.
Yeah, I think so.
They were very good. We treated victims with the utmost respect. I still can't bloody get words out.
Mm.
And all that sort of thing. But we didn't need to be told by somebody that's not even in that field.
No.
That, you know, they're in psychology and all this sort of stuff, how we should treat people. Well, you're not here on the ground. No. We are compassionate people. We are caring for them. We've an outstanding relationship with victims.
Yeah.
So, you know, so we didn't really want to partake in this anyway. No. So what we did is a bit of a sidestep here. We went into the shift sergeant and said, can you give us a call in about 5 minutes? Say you've got something urgent you need the investigators to deal with.
You cheeky bugger.
I know, yeah. So we got up there and, of course, 5 minutes later, a knock on the door. He actually came up himself. He goes, oh, look, sorry. He said, can I have Schultz in? I won't mention the other copper's name. He goes, I need him to help with this is a pretty serious DV matter.
Yeah.
And anyway, so, oh, sorry, we've got to go. Look, we'd love to hear and listen to, you know, everything's going on here, but we've got work to do. So
well
sorry.
Done, that man. That's bloody good to hear. Yeah, no, it's a little trick to the trade, mate. Yeah. Yeah, I found some of that did get a bit condescending at times. You sort of, we've got an objective to carry out. Like we've spoken about that before. To be sort of, bring it back to the emotion. It's like, listen, there's emotion. Of course, we're going to be nice to people. Okay, we have to do this for a long time.
Yeah.
And it's not really our role.
I think you mentioned it right early on. And the fact that if we treated people, like you said, you can honestly say that we treated people as we would expect to be treated if it was a family member or something like that. And we did. And victims were exactly the same. Treat them as we expected. And, of course, you will hear the bad stuff in the media and all that sort of thing because it is a police force. There is so many cops. Yeah. There's so many personalities. There are some bad cops in the force, unfortunately.
Of course there are.
But it's a fact of numbers, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
I know some bad, I don't know. I'm assuming there's some bad plumbers.
Yeah, exactly.
There's probably bad taxi
exactly
drivers.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I can honestly say that, you know, we had some really good results because we were compassionate.
Yeah.
You know, and we were, until an offender turned violent, we would show adult expectations.
Yeah.
And we spoke to them that way. And if it went south, it went south, and that's just the way it went.
Wasn't up to us.
No, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. Like, what happens here is their decision, basically. It's not. It's how they react.
Yeah. No. Exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think it's a universal thing. I've spoken. You know, we keep getting messages, and I keep talking to people, and they're all saying that it's a universal thing. That a lot of people might be in their own mind, but they're saying, no, what you said's 100% correct. And this is more the operational policing side of things. So, like our non-police listeners, who I'm very happy to have on board, just quietly. This is more just talking about what it's like as the coppers on the road. So this gets down to the real ordinary cop stuff.
Yep.
It's, we talk about, when we discuss the efficiency of things, that's just a practicality of the day-to-day work.
Yep.
And it's important because it's like, bloody hell, work's just, it's more difficult than it needs to be because of these reasons.
Yep.
And the job's hard enough already. It's a tricky job. You've got to balance emotion with getting the job done and fatigue of night shifts and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, the constant scrutiny. So it's already tricky.
Yep.
It's like if you could just have a little bit of help with your systems,
yep,
that would be good.
Oh, mate, the stress levels and the, especially, I can talk definitely about the NT police force, but the stresses would have been, I reckon, halved if the computer system was efficient. It would have saved hours and hours of police work where they could actually go out and engage more with the community.
Yeah.
And get things done. And engaging the community, that's an interesting one. I do remember a conversation when I first went out and took out, and we're probably jumping around a bit here, but
it's
just as things come to us, because we were here to talk about Anzac Day.
Hmm.
But I'll just mention this one. So I was when I first went out to Ramangini, of course, it was a new intervention station, spent all that money in building it and all that sort of thing. And very recently through, they sent out and they said, we want a 10% reduction in crime.
Oh, I remember.
Take out the area. And anyway, the thing with Ramangini, it was only policed part of the time before that, right?
Yeah.
So you never had constant cops. If you're a constant cop and you get ingrained in the community and talk to people and chat to people, you will pick up offences that you wouldn't normally pick up if you're just coming in for a day or two.
Oh, of course.
And all that sort of, because people feel comfortable coming forward.
Yeah.
Anyway, I rang my senior sergeant straight away, basically, when this order came through. We want to see a 10% reduction in crime. And, I mean, crime in Ramagini wasn't that high at the time because, of course, there was a lot of stuff not being detected because police weren't actually police.
They weren't
there.
Used to police.
Exactly.
Yep.
And anyway, and I said, it's not going to happen, boss.
No.
And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, I said, the fact is I'm the sort of cop that do get engaged in the community, or I chat to people. I walk down the road. I don't drive to the shop. I walk down so I can actually have a chat. The amount of times I've been walking down and, you know, an Aboriginal house, I'll sit there and call out. They go, Ben, can you come and help us with something? Yeah, of course. And I walk in, they'd turn over their favourite flour tin, you know, and I would sit down and have a discussion about the family problems they were having.
Yeah.
You know, and I would give advice on, you know, how I saw the best way to go. And they were happy with that.
Yeah.
But also, in chance with that, like, they used to come up to me. I remember one of the funny ones, a guy came up to me and said, hey, Ben. I said, yeah, what's that? He goes, mate, I want to make a complaint. What's that about? And he goes, my drug dealer, he's charging me way too much.
I do love
my
that.
My response was, well, mate, that's disgusting.
That's terrible.
Mate, give me that information. I'll go down there and sort it out
for
you.
We'll have a chat with him right now. Until next time he's got a big heap of gear in, let me know. I'll go down and see what he's charging
for
it.
Exactly. But as a result, of course, we get more jobs.
Yeah, so crime increases.
Exactly. The stats increase.
Yeah, that's all
crime
it is.
Crime doesn't.
Yeah.
it's always there.
Yeah, stats are always a funny thing because, they weren't a great indicator of what's going on.
No.
It indicated what's being reported.
And you can fudge stats to a certain extent.
Yeah, you can report certain things and not other. I mean, we're not going to go right into that, but yeah.
No.
I was never a very firm believer in just being stats driven. It's sort of not. Look, I get it. It's very hard to objectively measure the effectiveness of policing.
Yep.
I mean, it comes down to the perception of the safety by the. So there's two different things there. There's actual safety.
Yep.
In Australia, we are very, very safe
comparatively
to the rest of the world. I'm not saying we're perfect,
yep.
but we are quite safe. What heads out in the media can plant fear into the community's mind.
Yep.
And what may look like, and what is relatively low statistics of offending, can be blown up a little bit and can make people feel feel angst and fear.
Exactly.
That's not taking away from legitimate victims by any means, because I've spoken to so many of them and I've been a victim of property crime myself. So I get that. But I think the biggest measure is the perception of safety and the perception of police doing their job. So it's that people, you are seen to be doing your job.
Yep.
And people go, no, the coppers are there. I haven't heard of any crime, like in my local area. I haven't heard of any break-ins.
Yep.
Because the other thing is, as we all know, stories can get blown out of proportion.
Oh, definitely.
So it may be that a couple of kids have broken into a house, stolen a car, gone on a joyride, and that's the end of that.
Yep.
I'm not taking away from that.
Yep.
They absolutely need to be dealt with. That's completely unacceptable.
Yep.
But that can get fudged. Like, people will say, oh, it was a big gang. They were big. They were all armed. They were doing this. They beat the people up. They did this. They stole cars. They went on rampages all around town. So quite often what you'll hear on the Chinese whispers mill is not the reality of what's actually occurred.
No.
But the trouble is it strikes people in the fear.
Yep.
And all of a sudden the stories are out there and it's... It becomes quite bad. And I'm not saying bad things don't happen.
No.
The trouble is bad things do happen a lot, as we all know.
But I think we get to see it, though, a lot too, because I know you and me on a number of occasions, there's often media will call you and you'll give out a couple of things just to keep them interested. It's a bit like throwing a dog a bone, so to speak.
Yeah.
And look, the media people, you're not dogs, but it's just an analogy, all right?
And we had a good relationship.
Yeah,
with them.
Yeah, we did, yeah. But sometimes, depending on who the reporter was too, it will come back and you go, that's completely different from what we actually said. Like, it's not even really related to it.
Mate, I was in the Tennant Creek Memorial Club, the memo, Tennant Creek memo. And there'd been, I think it was an arson where a house had burnt. And anyway, it was pretty wild show in Tennant Creek. So anyway... I'm in the pub on a Friday afternoon. I think we were all there, a couple of us there. And the locals, who were good, they were our mates. They were in there having a beer after work. And anyway, I had a chat to one. He said, oh, so anyway, I hear that such and such has burnt that house down. I said, no, that's not what happened. He said, mate, it was in the bloody news. That's what happened. I said, mate, I wrote the media release. I'm telling you, that's not what happened. So I've just finished that job yesterday, and I wrote the media release. That media release has been... Whatever gilding has occurred to the lilies involved in that one.
That's right.
And it is what it is, mate. But I'm telling you, that's not what happened. Oh, no, that's what... Mate, I'm telling... Horse here.
Yeah, that's right.
This is my mouth.
Yeah. And I really think that the media needs a more of a duty of care to the population to make sure they are more accurate. And look, I know they do it to sensationalise, but you've got to be careful about how you,
I definitely think, of course, there is some level of sensationalism. And yes, of course, I'm not going to get into that argument. Of course there is. However, it's a vacuum that must be filled.
Yeah.
So they must produce news.
Yeah.
If there is a news story and they need information.
Yeah, they're under the pump as well. Yeah.
If the police aren't providing the information, they will find someone who will provide the information. And we have no control over that source.
Yeah.
That source could be someone who's just had a great afternoon on the old glass barbecue. For those who aren't quite sure, that means might have been having a few puffs of methamphetamine beforehand.
Yep.
And see a camera and are happy to tell them anything they're willing to hear and make their story legitimate. Yep. And I've seen that happen.
Well, yeah, that's true. And I know a number of media actually got reports sometimes that were completely inaccurate. But, you know, and they've sent sometimes tens of thousands to go and actually investigate this and found out it was all bullshit.
Yeah, so, that's right.
And look, in the media's defence as well, I can honestly say since I became, they call me an influencer. I don't know about how much influence we actually give.
Influence you to press the stop button.
Pretty much, yeah. you know, I like seeing the numbers go up for the listeners, people listening to this. Mm. The media's not different.
It's exactly the same.
You know, they want numbers, they want readers and all that. It's a business. That's what they do. Yep. You know, ours is not a business at this stage, but we're just trying to get some realities out from behind the scenes.
Yep.
And we do talk to a lot of people, so we get quite a broad spectrum, of, especially from behind the scenes, of stuff that happened. Of course, there's stuff we can't say.
There's things that just aren't. It's not appropriate for us to share. Yeah, just not. It's not that it's a secret. It is a secret. It's not. It's not our story to tell. So
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I mean, we started off. It's Anzac Day. We've had a good relaxing day. We're gonna have a pretty relaxing afternoon. We thought we'd just record our thoughts and
I mean, in the future, we've had some good feedback as well. Mm. One person actually, Stu, his wife Lisa, suggested that she wants to hear more from the investigative side of things. So actually, how we get to where we get to.
Yeah. So the nuts and bolts, and to me that makes sense. So a lot of people who aren't police wouldn't understand the actual process of conducting an investigation.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm more than happy that we go into that and just talk about a job and then say these are the lines of inquiry we might go into it, and just you can almost think along with us at home and sort of go, we've got information off the victim that says this, we've gotten a very thorough timeline of what they've done, so out of that timeline we might have topic boxes and we'll go into that. But I think we could probably go into the investigative methodology a little bit, because it's no secret.
It's quite logical. I mean, there's some things we probably won't really pass on.
No,
but there's little tricks of the trade and all that sort of
thing. Yeah, so there are things that are trade secrets.
Yes.
Like there are methodologies that police have that aren't public knowledge.
Yep.
And there's a reason for that. It's because that we need to covertly investigate certain matters. We probably won't go into that. We'll probably go into things that people do know happened.
Yep.
But the real basic stuff is, I'll just tell you how we interview a witness.
That's right,
The topic boxes, and I'll explain that term a little more, but it might be how we detect and how we establish lines of inquiry out of a very basic victim statement.
Exactly, that's right. And it's I think, well, anybody that's, and look, this isn't CSI people, what we're talking here is realistic.
Pretty basic. Yeah, that's right, yeah.
but people do find that interesting, how you actually get from one point to the next, and sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah.
Sometimes stuff will just fall in your lap, and we will talk about one that you and I were both involved in.
Yeah.
Everything, even the information we got led us to a place which actually gave us a different offender.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things that just landed in our lap. And,
yep.
And we looked awesome.
Yeah.
We basically sold an unlawful entry in about 10 minutes.
I mean, we might have looked awesome, but there was a lot of luck happened that day. And listen, mate, with the Queensland Police Service helicopter flying overhead,
well,
they've obviously cottoned on to the fact we're talking about methodology.
It could be.
So we're at about our magic mark.
We are, mate. But so I think
it's Anzac Day. So
we've
enjoyed our day today. I hope everyone else did and paid their respects around the country. And we'll be back.
And look, this one was just a bit of a, you know, shooting the breeze.
Bit of a yarn.
Just because it was Anzac Day, and we thought, you know, it's nice to remember those people that have died for our freedom.
Yeah.
So and it's important we always remember them. Not even on Anzac Day, every single day.
No, definitely, mate. Righto.
Yep.
We'll talk to you next time. It's the Two Ordinary Cops, mate.
Signing off.
See you later.